Let's log on to the internet, shall we? What's Trending is brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
Basketball lost a legend yesterday, Joe. Bill Russell, the Boston Celtics great, passed away age 88. Russell will be remembered as a winner. 11 NBA titles in 13 years. Last two titles were as a player coach. He was the first black coach in the NBA as well. Some amazing stats about Russell. 10 times he averaged more than 20 rebounds in a season. Averaged 10 times in his 13-year career. He was 10-0 in game sevens, which that's kind of ridiculous. We have all these conversations about Michael Jordan and LeBron James and Magic Johnson and anyone else. And we sometimes forget about Bill Russell and his 11 titles with the Celtics in 13 years. And part of that is because, well, he had a complicated relationship with fans.
Yes, he did.
In a city that is known for having a racist portion of their fan base and treating their star players, particularly their black ones, poorly. And part of that is also, well, he played at a time when we don't, the NBA wasn't as big as it is today.
No.
It was way in the background to not the NFL, rather Major League Baseball.
Yeah, as people like to tell you, there were times where there was a time in which the NBA Finals were on tape delay.
Yeah, Magic Johnson's first title.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the ratings bonanza that was Bird versus Magic in the NCAA tournament. Here's Jay King talking about Bill Russell's relationship with Boston. So it's just some interesting fodder.
There was a lot of bad blood between Russell and the city of Boston. Not from the city of Boston side necessarily, but because of the way he was treated at the time. Like, he dealt with so much when he was a player that he should not have had to deal with. And Boston historically has a reputation for being racist. I do think he helped change that. I think, you know, the way that he stood up to that and just the overall success he was able to have as a black man in Boston helped change that. And obviously there's still a lot of progress to be made in Boston and everywhere else. But Bill Walton once described him to me as the ultimate difference maker. And that's what he was on the court, off it, everything. He just lived a life of really, you know, being a winner in everything that he did. And so it was really tough on him, though. Like, there was definitely, you know, a lot of years he didn't come around the Celtics too much. And so that's sad. And the statue that he has in Boston, it took a long time for him to okay that and allow the Celtics to create a statue for him. But there's nobody more deserving of it than Bill Russell.
Yeah, I mentioned the basketball loss of legend, Joe, because remember, he went to the University of San Francisco. Have you ever looked at a list of all-time NCAA titles? Sometimes they'll give you a list. If you're an NC State fan, it warms your heart. You go and look at a list of schools that have won multiple NCAA titles.
There's not a lot of them.
There's not a lot. But San Francisco is one of them.
Yeah.
Casey Jones, Bill Russell were there. They won back-to-back titles in the 50s. This after Russell won two high school titles his last 2 years of high school and a gold medal before he got to the NBA, then wins 11 of 13, including 8 in a row at one point. That did not stop Boston fans, though, from at one point during that 8-year run, breaking into his suburban home and taking a crap in his bed and putting the N-word on his house.
You'll find there's his own memoir where he goes into details about all these incidents that happened or stories where you had other civil rights leaders literally on watch in his hotel room while he's trying to do some work, you know, some civil rights, get on the streets, try to change things, help with basketball camps and integration, where they're literally
the first to go to Africa, too.
Literally sitting there in a chair pointed at the door with a gun just in case, you know, because that's what he had to deal with. And this is Bill Russell's yet another example where if you don't like how things are going, if you feel that things have to be changed, you don't look to the national level. You have to do it yourself. And Bill Russell's story is filled with many, many instances where he got involved to change things for the better and deal with the repercussions of, as you mentioned, you know, people breaking into his house, or as I've mentioned, people literally trying to take his life, because this was coming up at a time when civil rights leaders were being assassinated. I mean, and we're not just talking Martin Luther King.
No, I was saying he marched with Martin Luther King. So aligned himself with Muhammad Ali.
He aligned himself with Muhammad Ali. And, you know, this is why when people get into the whole concept of sticking to sports, or it's silly to me, because there's an entire history of athletes who have gotten involved to change things for the better. And it also once again illustrates the time in which we can look back on Russell, right, with this kind of rose-colored soft focus, because, man, it wasn't it great. Well, no, it wasn't great, because he had to deal with this stuff. It's the same way with Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali didn't become beloved until he was unable to speak, and they basically reworked the way we talked about Muhammad Ali, kind of stripping all the context of all the things he had dealt with, leading up to the point where, you mentioned Martin Luther King, he got assassinated. So I hope these are stories where you strip away the gauzy, soft focus, look back on these things, and understand that they put a lot of sacrifice to move things forward, and that's what's required of people if we want to continue doing that.
That was actually what was good about the last decade of Bill Russell's life. He was embraced by Kobe Bryant and even Charles Barkley and the current Ray Allen, the current players from this era who, you know, like I said, we sometimes tend to think that basketball either started with Michael Jordan or Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. It's just not the case. And to win the thing 11 times in 13 years, and you could sit here and say, oh, they only had, you know, 12 teams or 16 teams in the league. Do you know how much better those teams were? Because they only had 12 or 16 teams. The talent pool, it was pretty strong what he had to go through, particularly some of those Laker teams that he ended up beating, including the last one in 69, what came into focus in this most recent HBO documentary or fake documentary about the Lakers and about Jerry West. That's the year that Jerry West was the MVP and was the only MVP from the losing team.
Next up,
number four.
Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He's a petty man. And there's a long history between him and Jimmy Johnson, the old Dallas Cowboys coach who is in the Hall of Fame now, but he's not in the Dallas Cowboys Ring of Honor. This is a guy who won Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys. And we know the history of the Dallas Cowboys since, right? It's just been after Barry Switzer, a steady decline in quality and shenanigans and circus-like nature around the Dallas Cowboys. So Jerry Jones was at camp and he talked to Newey Scruggs. Newey Scruggs is in Dallas. Fun fact, Newey Scruggs actually came through WREL at one point during his television career. And he was asked, Newey asked Jerry Jones about, hey, what's going on with the Ring of Honor and Jimmy Johnson again? Like, why is this not happening? Here's Jerry's response.
Jerry, I like you. I respect you. But I'm going to say this. It seems very petty of what's going on between you and Jimmy from the standpoint that he's not in that Ring of Honor, because when you think about the Hall of Fame and you think about those championships, I'm just saying that's how it comes off to people.
Yeah.
Because there's you two together, you guys rebuilt that Cowboy dynasty that Tom Landry had.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's BS for anybody to be making anything. I've said I'm going to put him in. Now, when I put him in, and the circumstances and what I do with that, there's a lot more than Jimmy to think about here. And I've got a lot of other lives out here that have laid a lot on the line on the field that need to be in that Ring of Honor as well. And so how I do that, what I do it with, I get to make that decision, and it isn't at the end of the day all tailored around whether Jimmy's sniveling or not.
It is your franchise. You do get to make the decision.
Well, and I'll be very sensitive and be very appreciative of what Jimmy is, but it's too much to say, well, that is the thing that gets up and goes to bed at night when we think about the Ring of Honor as to Jerry and Jimmy's relationship. Okay? Jerry and Jimmy were the two of the luckiest guys that's ever been on this earth to get to be sitting here having this talked about, if you want to know the truth about it.
I always appreciate the conversation.
That's Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, there's just lots of other things that we have to consider, whether or not he's sniveling. Come on, man. Grown-ass men still cannot get over who gets credit for what with the Dallas Cowboys.
You didn't make the Herschel Walker trade, Jerry, just so you know.
Gosh. But again, it tracks. It's what's the hashtag? Wire men. There you go. Here's a prime example. Wire men. Look at these two. Dopes. Still petty. Next up.
Number three.
Huge weekend for Aaron Judge and the Yankees. Joe, I know you're excited.
Well, the baseball season's still going?
The countdown is on, Joe.
All right.
Aaron Judge had a walk-off home run Thursday night and a win over the Royals. Then he had a grand slam in Friday's game and a comeback win by the Yankees. Let's hear the second clip there, Victoria. That's the grand slam clip.
Now the bases loaded, two outs. He struck out to start this inning. High drive, right field. Going back, Dozier, track, wall, see ya! A grand slam! A grand season continues!
Did they have a mic on the bat?
I think so.
That sounded good. Amazing. Then he hit really another good. Home run, hit number 42 in Saturday's 8-2 win. This is what that one sounded like.
High drive, right field. Melendez back on the track. See ya. There's 200. Another home run for Aaron Judge. Number 42. RBI's 90, 91. Amazing.
Judge had four home runs in the first three games of the series. Did not homer yesterday. Yankees lost yesterday, Joe, to the lowly Royals, which has prompted them to make a trade to fleece the Oakland A's of two of their important pitchers. So you can breathe a little bit easier now because I know you're worried about how the Yankees are going to close this thing out.
They'll be fine, man. They'll be fine.
They need pitching. They got Frankie Montes today from the A's. Other big move in baseball today was Josh Hader being swapped from Milwaukee to San Diego. San Diego trying to be a player here.
No way they can add Shohei Ohtani to their already stacked lineup.
According to, I think it was Buster Olney said today that the Angels are going to keep Ohtani, which they should.
Of course they should. I just think it is funny that the Angels have been blessed with two otherworldly baseball talents, right?
Yes, Mike Trout.
Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. And nobody knows a damn thing about it because they play for the Angels. Sometimes I feel like the commissioner should do best interest in baseball clause and just be like, hey, what are we doing here, Angels? You stink.
I've given you this theory of mine, right?
No, you have not.
The Angels won the World Series in 2002. They really had no business winning the World Series in 2002.
Yeah, I remember that.
They
right.
beat Barry Bonds, yep. who was on an all-time yep. heater. I don't care what you say about steroids.
Yeah, came out of nowhere.
He was on an all-time mm-hmm. heater. The Giants were the best team. Barry Bonds was the best player on the planet. Being walked with the bases loaded. The Angels had no business winning that championship.
Yeah.
They sold their soul. They are NC State 83 right there. The Angels 0-2. They won't win for another 40 years.
In a way, it's kind of like the Miami Marlins. You won two World Series? Two. Okay. But because of that, you had to sell your soul and you got to be owned by Derek Jeter for a hot minute and ruin
everything.
He's
gone now.
I know. He's gone now. We'll see if they actually get back to being decent.
The sleeper agent.
Next up.
Number two.
Has anybody watched the Jeter thing?
No. My sister asked me about it. She's like, oh, I watched some of it. I'm like, I just have no interest.
I mean,
and I love Derek Jeter.
When one of the previews for an episode of the Jeter documentary on ESPN is, man, Jeter gave the media nothing. Why am I going to watch an episode where it's like an hour of him not giving anything to the media? He gave me nothing juicy. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, commend you for that? You're not interesting. You deliberately made yourself uninteresting. So why are you, what makes you think that we're going to watch this? I want to see A-Rod. I mean, honestly, that's the pull of this documentary.
Yeah, I mean,
in the great ironic twist.
With A-Rod, for sure.
In the grand ironic twist of this, it's a documentary about Jeter, yet the most compelling part of the Jeter documentary is Alex Rodriguez.
I ended up watching the Mets. I finally watched the end of the Mets,
yeah.
30 for 30, because I was so interested in the. I wanted to save the episodes.
Man, you binged some 30 for 30s
I
on
did.
Vacation.
And I watched it, and I was like, you know what? You know what we haven't had, basically, since the Red Sox coming back against the Yankees?
Mm-hmm.
Like an epic finale in baseball. That I'm watching this Mets Red Sox game from 86 going, are we sure the Mets won? Like, are we sure they pulled this thing out?
Positive about that?
Right? Like, I think that's how baseball got people to fall in love with baseball. You truly didn't know what the heck was going to happen. Now you got the Dodgers and Yankees and whoever else just buying teams, and it's a foregone conclusion.
All right. Give me number two again.
Number two.
Panthers in pads today for training camp. Coming out of a weekend, the whole, you know, welcome back football business on Saturday as we get ready for preseason games right around the corner. And we have reached peak coaches not telling you what reps mean, right? So we got the Carolina Panthers with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Matt Corral. Everybody's going to love what they love based on scant footage that you might catch on the internet. My personal favorite was some Panthers fan account seeing some 30-second clip of Matt Corral with nobody on him just throwing balls in a drill. And it's just, man, Matt Corral looks like that dude with the huffy face emoji. Why do we do this to ourselves?
Did he get 2,000 likes?
Probably, yeah. No. I'll have to go back and check. Matt Corral looks like that dude. I should tweet that out just to get 5,000 retweets. But why do we do this? I mean, honestly, why do we do? Why do we act as though what we see in training camp is in any way, shape, or form some indicator of what's going to happen in the regular season? If that's the case, Sam Darnold would be the best. I mean, we know Sam Darnold in these conditions looks amazing, and it gets people to go, ooh, if he could just put it together in the regular season. He can't.
Spoiler.
We've seen it, okay? You keep expecting different results. You might like him. He might look good in training camp, but he ain't it, all right? So this gets us to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They draft Kenny Pickett. They got Mitch Trubisky on the roster. Bless Mitch Trubisky, man. I think he got a raw deal in Chicago. I think he did the right thing by being the backup in Buffalo. And now he's got this opportunity in Pittsburgh, right? They're trying to replace Ben Roethlisberger. Instead, you got Matt Canada, former NC State offensive coordinator, talking to the media about how, whoa, 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 now wait a minute. Wait a minute. We got Mason Rudolph.
Well, Coach has been very clear that, you know, we base it on resume and kind of what they've done. So Mason's getting the second reps right now and almost equal to, maybe slightly a little bit less than Mitch. So we've given a very, very fair shot to this point through camp and have been exactly equal. And Mason has, you know, he's made a lot of plays at times. He's played very well at times for us, for the organization. And he's got a great shot at it. He's being treated that way. And, you know, his history with our players and with our system and in some cases certainly is a, you know, positive for him.
Buying that, Joe?
No.
Yeah, you're not buying that.
No.
No.
Remember, Mason Rudolph was with the team at the end of last year. 2 years ago, ended up playing a chunk of time. He's not terrible. I mean, he's not out loud, you know, turning the ball over at a Sam Darnold rate. But he's also not an NFL quarterback. So there's a reason they went out and got Mitch Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mason Rudolph's not an NFL quarterback. Then there's a reason they used a first-round pick on Kenny Pickett. Because, well, Mitch Trubisky might be a short-term Band-Aid, but you still need a long-term solution. If they somehow go into this season with Mason Rudolph as the quarterback and Matt Canada as the play caller, I weep for you, Steelers fans. I weep for you.
Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
Deshaun Watson was suspended 6 games by former U.S. judge, U.S. Circuit Judge Sue L. Robinson. This was part of an agreement that the NFL got into when Roger Goodell and his spinning wheel, press your luck form of punishment for a variety of cases got so bad that you couldn't trust where he was coming from. So the NFLPA and the NFL agreed to this third party to decide what to do with Deshaun Watson. And 6 games is the suspension that was handed down today. Robinson made the ruling after conducting a 3-day hearing back in June. The NFL argued for Robinson to have an indefinite suspension of at least one full season and then require Watson to apply for reinstatement. This is according to the Washington Post and other outlets. The NFLPA is believed to have argued for no suspension. Robinson made a ruling after each side submitted a post-hearing brief. Now, the league or the NFL can appeal Robinson's ruling to Commissioner Roger Goodell or to a person that he designates. The appeal would have to be filed in writing within 3 days. The NFL and Watson said in a joint statement on Sunday night that they would abide by the Robinson ruling, giving you an indication that they knew it was going to be manageable for them. And they urged the NFL to do the same, but without an appeal to Goodell. So we shall see where they go with this. But here's the thing. They're not going to appeal because they can only really appeal the process itself. And this is a process that both sides agreed to. And it's a process that the judge kind of turned on the NFL saying, look, I agree with everything that you said. You brought the burden of proof, but you can't change the standards in the middle of the situation. The NFL, she called him out, essentially saying, you let public opinion drive your decisions. That's how we got here in the first place. All you got to do is go back to Ray Rice to get a prime example of how things work with the NFL. And she flipped that on them, saying, I'm not going to go for the full season suspension because you're doing something that has been unprecedented, or you want something that's been unprecedented based on your own rulings. But there are some other interesting tidbits in here that really show you just the level of grossness to it all. And while how everybody understands what Deshaun Watson did was bad, it's bad for the league, and he shouldn't be playing the chunk of the season or all of the season. They had to explicitly state that Deshaun Watson could only receive massages from a team employee, from the Browns, designated by the Browns. That's not somebody you can trust if you feel like that has to be the case. And you're also, in this position, putting a Browns employee in danger. And the NFL does the NFL want more of that? Because the NFL is already dealing with that thanks to Daniel Snyder and the Washington Commanders, where they had a workplace environment that was gross, disgusting, terrible for women. So it's tough all around, Julio, but I keep coming back to the NFL's own clown shoes history when it comes to punishment that put him in a position that ultimately sees Deshaun Watson not get a punishment that seems fair.
Yeah, believe it or not, this is progress for the NFL.
I guess, yeah.
Because the process before where Roger Goodell was commissioner and was acting as the judge and jury, it's not fair to the players. And to use a third party, in this instance, a federal judge, you go into the process and both sides agree to it. I think you have to abide by those rules and by that ruling. It'd be interesting to see if the NFL appeals it. I don't think there's a real, under the old system, we saw Ben Roethlisberger for his problems have a 6-game suspension, get it reduced to 4. I don't see the NFL like getting this extended to 8 games or whatever they would consider half of a season. I think at this point, it's best for the NFL to just realize this is the new process. It is actually progress for you and the players, and you have to accept it.
This is how messed up the NFL has gotten it and why this is kind of brain-breaking for a lot of people. Judge Robinson agreed that Deshaun Watson intended to cause contact with his penis with a massage therapist several times. He did so for a sexual purpose, unwanted sexual contact, and that he knew such contact was unwanted. He knew this, and she went so far to say, without calling it directly, but that he lied. He essentially lied in this process. Despite all of that, 6 games, because Robinson had to go back to the NFL and said, look, you just can't do this based on your own rules. So here's where we're going to go with this. One thing I did want to wrap on, it's the phrase nonviolent sexual conduct. In the decision from Sue L. Robinson, she wrote that Watson's, quote, pattern of behavior was egregious, but noted that behavior was, quote, non-violent sexual conduct in explaining the decision to suspend him only 6 games. I have a problem with the phrasing as legal as it is. By using the phrase non-violent sexual conduct, it's going to give, for lack of a better term, knuckle-dragging apologists who see nothing wrong with Deshaun Watson an out. Saying, well, I mean, it just happened. Or, I mean, who's to say that he didn't mean to, but it happened? No. All those things are laid out in the 16 pages. But if you focus on nonviolent sexual conduct, it makes it sound like unwanted sexual conduct is somehow lessened because it wasn't quote-unquote violent. Well, violent is a word that is open to all sorts of interpretation. Words can be violent. That's been proven. Having somebody shove their penis at you in a way that is sexual, I would view that as violent. Unwanted. That's traumatic. That is not something you want. It's the problem we continue to have with these conversations. In the NFL, or really in general, it's not just the NFL, but in society, we have this need to see it, right? If you don't see it, then it can't be that bad. But if you ask anyone who has ever had to deal with an unwanted sexual conduct situation, unwanted sexual advances, I mean, what does it do to you? It's a traumatic event. And I'm sure there is a very large population of people seeing this unfold, seeing this in the news and having to relive it themselves. That's traumatic. But using that phrase somehow lessens it for people, which is unfortunate. Which also gets me to my final point with Deshaun Watson and how we talk about these things. We have to have self-awareness in our business. And in our business, we are not equipped to have these conversations. We are just not. We are not equipped with the legal backgrounds. We are not equipped with the understanding of the process. We are also not equipped to talk about these things in human terms because we're talking about a game that is very much stripped of humanity. The NFL is a next man up. The NFL is an entertainment product for a good chunk of people that only care about one thing. How does this affect my team? How does this affect my fantasy team? I mean, we saw the report today that Deshaun Watson came out for training camp today and was greeted with cheers. Well, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. He's not the first one who's been in a situation like this and fans cheer it back like he overcame adversity, which is the dumbest way to present these things, but that's how it will be presented.
That will come next.
He will overcome adversity. You mean the adversity of being a sexual predator based on what we've read, based on what the judge herself laid out saying this was an egregious pattern of unwanted sexual contact? So we're not equipped to talk about it. Because, Gilio, as you pointed out, there was a headline that people were getting mad about where it was described as the Cleveland Browns got their first win of the season with this ruling, only six games. I got no problems with that headline because it strips down to the bare essence what we ultimately care about and what the Browns cared about and what they knew what they were getting themselves into. Never forget that they structured this contract with Deshaun Watson where his $45 million signing bonus is untouched. It is guaranteed he's getting all of it. They structured the contract so that the real money, the guaranteed money, doesn't kick in until 2023. They knew he would miss time this year. So because of the way they structured his contract, I think they're only giving him like $1 million this upcoming season, which over this course of six games, he will miss a grand total of $345,000 in game checks. That's gross. But they knew it, just like the Texans knew it. And I am curious to see what the NFL does in terms of how they go about it with the teams making this decision by rewarding a guy who has had conduct that's detrimental to the NFL.